Last week, new regulations took effect governing how sign language interpreters are used in places like courtrooms and hospitals here in Michigan. The changes will affect not only Michigan's deaf and hard of hearing population, but interpreters as well. Here to help us learn more about what the state hopes to accomplish with the revised rules, Leslie Fritz, Deputy Director of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. Welcome back, Leslie.
Thanks so much for having me.
The state only instituted a certification system for sign language interpreters 7 years ago. Let's start by describing the problems that the state hopes to address with the changes that went into effect here just a week ago. Can you give us an overview of what they're hoping to accomplish?
Absolutely. 7 years ago, you're right, for the first time, Michigan required certification for individuals working as sign language interpreters. Prior to that, no standards needed to be met for anybody who wanted to call themselves an interpreter. So the first step was creating the certification and professionalizing that important profession. These rules take the next step. And essentially, the rules recognize for the first time that not all communication is equal. The communication that occurs, for example, in a doctor's office between doctor and patient is different than the communication that occurs in an employee training session or in a courtroom or in a classroom.
Different lexicon.
Exactly. Yeah. Different technical terms, different terminology, different subject matter, and somebody who is well-versed and able to interpret effectively in a classroom setting for a kindergartner or a first grader may not have the technical skill to work in an emergency room. And so for the first time, these rules recognize that those communications are different and require different levels of certification and different levels of experience. They also recognize that the consequences of miscommunication in those settings can be significantly impactful to the deaf person involved.
Hospitals, courtrooms, of course. Are there examples of unfair outcomes for a deaf defendant in a courtroom, for example, who didn't get an adequately accurate interpretation?
Well, those who are deaf advocates in our state certainly believe and point to, I can't cite a specific case, but there are the advocacy community argues that deaf individuals in our courtrooms more often than not, or too often, I guess I should say, don't get a fair trial because the communication isn't necessarily effective. The other place that it can be impactful and hard to measure are individuals sitting on juries who are deaf. If they are not receiving accurate, effective communication as they're listening to or participating in the trial, they may not render a correct verdict. So you've got a number of ways that justice in our state can be impacted by deaf participation in the justice system. So it works both ways, both defendant and participant.
Do you anticipate creating specialists, in other words, translators who specialize in the courtroom setting and specialize in a hospital setting, for example?
Well, the rules are not designed to force interpreters to select a particular setting, but that very well may be what occurs, in that an individual who receives the level of certification that's required to work in a courtroom and then also the legal endorsement, which is essentially an extra certification, may choose to make their living working in the courtroom exclusively because, like any business, as you're hiring sign language interpreters, you get comfortable working with somebody you believe they provide effective communication. You know they're good quality. The work they do is good quality. You tend to go back to those people, and so people become recognized as highly competent in a particular setting and may choose to practice exclusively in that case. It is not required under the rules. Somebody who has the certification, for example, to work in a courtroom, may also choose at times to work in a hospital setting or any other setting available to them. So exclusivity is not required, but certainly we could see that specialization being recognized and people choosing to go that route.
Leslie Fritz is our guest here on Current State. Leslie's Deputy Director of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. We're talking about new regulations that just took effect last week governing how sign language interpreters are used in particular places here in Michigan. Are there adequate numbers of translators?
There is a shortage right now based on geography. There are parts of our state that are rural enough where there is not the sufficient level of interpreters to work, especially in some of the more specialized settings. We hear about it most regularly in education because that is a different certification that is required to work in the classroom. The interpreter has to pass what's called the EIPA. So that's the most common place we hear about it. But certainly other places outside of the classroom experience it as well. But it typically is based predominantly on geography.
Is it
more
the
than
inner
anything.
City or is it rural settings?
It is northern Michigan and the UP, predominantly rural settings, where the most serious complaints come from, that there are not enough interpreters.
Mm. Are schools where interpreters are being trained, are they equipped to do the training that will be required by the new rules? Is that a concern?
Well, it's certainly a legitimate question. There are five interpreter training programs in Michigan. All of them produce good quality graduates. I can't say that I know specifically what percentage of their graduates are able to pass, take the certification test and pass it. But that's a question that we know is going to need to be examined. Are they producing enough in terms of numbers? Do they need to expand their capacity to meet demand? And like any other part of the market, if there is greater demand, we feel confident that the supply chain will expand. And are they producing individuals able to take and pass the certification tests? We have worked closely with those schools on the rule development, and they are focused on what the rules require, and we believe that they're doing a good quality job right now. The question is, do they need to expand to produce additional graduates? And that's a question that they'll have to answer based on the market demand.
What's the nearest location to us here in East Lansing where
Lansing
we're training?
Community College
LCC.
Has an ITP program, yep, okay. And there's an interpreter training program at Lansing Community College. That's one of the five.
How are these new regulations going to be enforced? How strict will that be?
Well, that is the responsibility of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights to enforce them, and we intend to be very, very rigorous in our enforcement. The communication that we're talking about is essential for a deaf or hard of hearing person in Michigan to be able to participate fully in our state's, everything the state has to offer, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's in getting and maintaining housing, whether it's in enjoying a public accommodation. So we intend to be very vigorous in our enforcement of the rules. And there's two different elements to that. Obviously, bad actors we will go after and ensure that we penalize them as necessary. But more important to us is to ensure that those who are affected by the rules understand the requirements. Because more often than not, what we see is not necessarily an attempt to get around them, but a misunderstanding of what the law requires when somebody requests an accommodation. And I'm talking about those folks who are needing to hire interpreters. We need to work as closely as we can with hospitals, with schools, with courtrooms, with employers, with hotels, with everybody who may be asked to provide an accommodation to ensure they understand what the law expects of them. Because we know that the vast majority of business owners in this state, public accommodation providers in this state, want to do the right thing for their customers, for their clients, for their patients. And we want to do all that we can to help them understand what the right thing is and what the law requires.
Well, maintaining credibility in the whole process is integrity in the whole process has got to be really important.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But how strictly? I mean, are we talking fines or jail time or I mean how?
Well, the law gives the department and the division the authority to levy fines. There's two different types of complaints that we'll investigate, and this may be more technical than you want to get into, so I'll try to keep it out of the weeds. But there's essentially two types of complaints. There's the my interpreter that I requested was not effective or not credentialed properly, essentially a poor interpreter complaint. That's not the greatest term for it. And then there's also the failure to accommodate complaint. I asked for an interpreter, and the doctor's office
just didn't happen.
Refused to provide one or decided they didn't want to hire me because I was too much hassle. That's a different level of complaint because that falls under the federal ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, as well as the state's Persons with Disabilities Act. So that is, we already enforce those laws and we already take those types of complaints. I asked for an accommodation. It's needed because I have a disability. It was not provided. That can end up in front of our commission. They can render penalties, everything from pain and suffering to back pay, whatever the situation may be. So there's two different types of complaints that we will take and investigate that can result in different types of of penalties. If the interpreter, for example, is pretending to have credentials they don't, they could be prohibited from working in that field, or their credential could be suspended. So there's a variety of different outcomes depending on the type of complaint that comes before us.
Leslie Fritz is our guest on Current State, Deputy Director of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. On another matter, Leslie, the Department of Civil Rights Division on Deaf and Hard of Hearing has welcomed a Michigan Public Service Commission probe into the state's telecommunication relay service for people with hearing and speech difficulties. AT&T has proposed to subcontract some of these telephone services. Can you explain the Civil Rights Department's concerns there?
Well, I can certainly explain our interest in what's happening. The TRS, the Telecommunications Relay Service, is the phone service that has been provided for years. If you are a deaf or hard of hearing individual, you pick up the phone to make a phone call. You're connected through this TRS, and essentially an interpreter aids that communication. We work with a couple of deaf employees. We use it in our own offices. The FCC at the federal level, the Federal Communications Commission, requires that states provide this service to deaf and hard of hearing individuals. Here in Michigan, it has all gone through. AT&T provides it regardless of who your phone carrier is. So even if the phone you've picked up is not an AT&T service, AT&T has provided that service, and then the phone companies send money back and forth to make sure that the costs are covered properly. And we all pay a small fee on our phone service, on our phone bill, our landline phone bill, to help cover the costs of that service. It's existed for many, many years. AT&T just recently announced, I believe in May, that they're no longer going to provide that service to anybody beyond their own customer base. So our concern, obviously, is that this service continue to be provided. It is a critical element of communication for deaf and hard of hearing persons in Michigan. So that was the PSC's interest in getting involved to ensure that we meet federal requirements and are providing the service that's required of us. But obviously, we have an interest in ensuring that service is uninterrupted for deaf and hard of hearing people in Michigan. So we encourage, the public comment period is open until August 7th. We encourage anybody who uses that service to speak up about how important it is.
While you're here, I have to let you know that I got several comments on your last visit of people who enjoyed our segment on you're marking the 50th anniversary of Michigan's Department of Civil Rights.
That was a fun topic. We could have talked about that one for a long time.
And the first in the nation.
The first in the nation.
50 years ago this year. Leslie Fritz has been our guest. Leslie's Deputy Director of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. Thank you very much.
Thank you.